introduction cues. And Jean, I'll have you go first.
Okay. I'm Jenny. I'm a grandmother. I have just recently moved to North Carolina after living for many years in New England. And my conversation partner is Carrie. Today is the 20th of December. I'm in North Carolina and I'm meeting Carrie for the first time over this media.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Am I forgetting anything?
No, that's perfect. Carrie, you can go ahead.
Hi, Jenny. My name is Carrie, and I'm also in North Carolina. I've lived here my whole life. I'm 33. I'm married. Don't have any children yet. And I think you covered the other things about where we are and what day it is. Oh, and my dog is here. Her name is Raven, and she's hanging out with us because we have a guy coming to fix our freezer. So she's with me right now.
Okay. First question. So it says.
Oh, got it. Okay. Jenny, what made you want to do this interview today?
The real reason is because I feel that so many people in the country are now, for lack of a better word, becoming tribal. Sort of a we, they type of situation. And people that I never knew felt strongly one way or another, and that I thought were more like me, sometimes things have come up in conversation to show me that I was totally wrong, that they have very different thoughts on some issues than I do. And it bothers me that people that I really felt a sense of camaraderie to, then it appeared that no, that wasn't true at all. And I was feeling like even my next door neighbor, it felt like there could be possible friction and not commonalities so much as divisiveness.
Right.
So this seemed like a good idea to find out what we have in common and to build on that rather than the negativity of the other issues that seemed to be cropping up that had never cropped up before.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll pose the question back to you, Carrie, as to what your thoughts are, what made you want to do this?
Mm-hmm. Well, I definitely agree with you that I actually think that tribal is a great, accurate word to describe the divisions in our country, where not only do people have very strong, differing opinions, we don't have a way to hold those differing opinions and be different from our neighbors and be comfortable with that. That's not something that we're necessarily taught in our culture. I feel like we're taught to either,
Raven, settle down.
We're taught to either just completely ignore, you know, and avoid a conversation that could have a disagreement, or we're taught to argue with people and try to change their mind. And we don't really have a middle ground of, I see this issue differently from you, and that is fine. That's really hard for us, especially when we're thinking about politics, because it's not an opinion like your favorite color, or your favorite sports team. It's it's a worldview. So if someone disagrees with your politics, they are basically saying that the way you interpret the world is incorrect, and that is really hard to deal with for anyone. So this project caught my eye because I think it's really important for us to be able to have these conversations, and just have, maybe for some of us, for the first time, talking to someone we disagree with, and finding common ground that we didn't expect to find. And I also, I have a master's degree in family counseling, and I have another master's degree in conflict management. So, like, I love school, and I am fascinated by all the ways that conflicts can play out. And there are ways that are destructive, but there are also ways that are constructive. And I thought that this project seemed an important effort in the direction of constructive conflicts.
I just think it's great that you're in the particular profession that you are, because I would think you, of all people, would be helping others build on positivity rather than the negativity that we seem to be experiencing. And it's odd that I guess it's not that odd, but we haven't really seen that this has been an issue so much in the forefront as it has been recently.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of, you know, that's really interesting. And I guess I don't want to think of why we've come to this part, you know, or this juncture or feeling so much has not ever, in my mind, been so much in the forefront. But my whole idea is, it doesn't matter why, so much as it matters now what you do with what you've got right now. Because it's no sense in pointing fingers.
Mm-hmm.
So now you've finished your master's?
Yes. I finished both of them, and I'm actually an academic advisor now. So I'm using some of the skills, but I'm not doing exactly the work that I studied in grad school. So I'm thinking that my next career shift might be back toward like clinical, or I'd like to be a marriage counselor, and then possibly a divorce counselor for couples who decide the best choice for them is to separate, and I could help them through that process, because that's a lot. So, but yeah, for now, academic advising, and I enjoy it. I get to work with students, and I love school, so it's fun.
Yeah, because with that type of background, I could see you as a liaison for anything, even involving the courts, because, you know, a lot of times they assign someone who can look at it from an outsider's point of view.
Yes.
Rather than the emotional, and just help people come to that kind of a decision. So, I mean, I think you're really, I admire anybody who has your type of background, and it must have been interesting, all the different courses that you were taking.
Yes. Very much so. And I do remember my first class in the conflict management program was in January 2017. And our professor was really open about like his political beliefs and his feelings about the 2016 election. And I remember being very uncomfortable with that, because even though I agreed with his political leanings, or at least some of them, I thought it was really inappropriate for him to talk about them in front of students, because he's in a position of authority and power over them, and it's not right for him to make some students feel like they can't be honest about their thoughts and feelings, especially at the graduate level. Like, we want conversation. We want people learning together. And for him to, I mean, it wasn't just a couple of comments. It was a lot. He said a lot. And I was not comfortable with that. But I think that one of the great things about the program was that we did do a lot of talking amongst ourselves and learning from each other. And one thing I valued about it was that a lot of my classmates were military affiliated. And so, and I've never served in the military. And so that was a really different perspective for me to learn about. So I appreciated that.
Do you know from talking with other students in the class, did they also feel a little put off by his conversations? Was it part of teaching, or was he, do you feel that he was trying to persuade you, or even by his rank, or that he was trying to influence other people, or was he trying to encourage people to speak out? And what was your take on that?
Sure, that's a great question. And I certainly could be wrong about his intention. It seemed to me like maybe he didn't have an agenda. He was just talking the way he usually talks about the things he likes to talk about. And I have worked with a lot of faculty members, and I have a lot of admiration and respect for many of them. But then there are also some who just kind of get used to being able to say whatever they want because they're in this position of authority and power.
Right.
And people care what they have to say. And that can, I think that would lead anyone to be a little careless with their words. So that was the impression I had, but he certainly could have been trying to initiate conversations. So I don't know, but I don't know if I talked about it with any other students in that class, but reflecting on it a few years later, I've talked about it with a few people and they've agreed that that sounds inappropriate.
I didn't know if he was trying to encourage or not encourage, but trying to see if anybody dared to sort of talk sort of maybe the opposite of the way he was talking, just to, as an intellectual,
right,
you know, exercise.
That could be true. That definitely could be true. That would have been interesting, especially, like, I remember this happening on the first day of class. So I don't know how comfortable anyone would have felt raising their hand and telling the professor, I totally disagree with you. Certainly would have been interesting. And if the professor had handled it well, it could have been a great exercise in a constructive dialogue where people learn about each other instead of trying to persuade each other. So
yeah,
I don't know.
And I see we have another question.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, who has been the most influential person in your life? Uh-oh, they're asking me first. Okay.
No, that's okay. Jenny, why don't you go ahead if you have an answer?
Well, I can't say I've ever had one particular person. I've been influenced by a lot of different people. A lot of them relatives.
Mm-hmm.
Teachers. I actually, to go into what you, you know, you definitely, that person had a big influence on you. And I have to say, I've had wonderful teachers. I've had a lot of positive experiences. Just by the teachers that are so into what they were teaching.
Yes.
And you could see that they really enjoyed what they were doing. And so that always makes it so that you want to, whatever it is you want to do, you really want to get into it. And,
right.
You know, and there's, but there's so many different avenues and things that I was influenced by that I'm really interested in a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
So, and my parents have, were wonderful, influential people, as well as my grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
What did they teach me? Mostly hard work and, you know, really, if you're going to do something, do it right. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's, I guess, the short answer. Mm-hmm. How about you, Carrie?
Yes, that's a that's a deep question. I feel like we could talk about that for a couple of days.
Yeah.
So it sounds like for you, a lot of relatives, particularly your parents and grandparents, who were important figures, and they give you a lot of, sounds like, quality life lessons. And then teachers, I totally agree that working with someone who is passionate about their subject is amazing. So that got you interested in a lot of different areas. And let's see, for me, the most influential person in my life, I would say my parents as well. And I also have, I would say my husband is an influential person, and I also have some close friends who I usually communicate with via text message every single day. and so
okay.
They're strong influences for me. What did they teach me? My parents also taught a lot about hard work, and they're pretty religious, evangelical Christians, so they influenced me a lot in the formation of my own faith, and they passed on their values of honesty and kindness, and sticking to your convictions, things like that. And then I would say that I'm kind of at that age where, and maybe some people got to this before me, probably, but you're taking a look back at what your parents taught you and thinking about what has been helpful, so you want to keep it, or what you're finding has been less helpful, so you don't want to keep it. And so I think that is something where my husband and my two really close friends have been influential, because we are all the same age, so we're all processing that. And I think that I mentioned this to Ben when we had our phone call the other week, that one of the central themes of my life for the past 10 years maybe has been kind of exploring my faith and how that's important to me. But my faith is also different than my parents' faith, and like navigating exactly what that looks like. And also, you know, me being a kid who always wanted to please my parents and make them proud of me, like that's something to navigate through as well. That, you know, their faith and the way that they understand it and live it out is very important to them. So I also don't want to disappoint them by having mine be different. But I also know that I have to be authentic to myself. So those are probably the most important influential figures. And they've taught me a lot of important things, and some of those lessons are still evolving for me.
I know, because my mother is now deceased, and my father as well. And while you remember so many of the good things and the things that you admire that they taught you, you also, I think it sounds like I have in common with you, is that you realize that there are some areas where maybe you want to vary off a little bit from what they did,
right,
and sort of change it, but not be totally different maybe.
Yeah.
Sometimes if they're very extreme in one area or not, then you feel, no, I'm not going to do it that way because I don't think that had as much of a positive effect on me, mm-hmm, as maybe I would like to reflect, mm-hmm, in my own personality. So,
yes.
Yeah, I think everybody probably modifies, mm-hmm, either one way or another. Now, I know my parents, we were not well off.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the things, and not only that, in that era, and you know, we're going back a ways,
mm-hmm,
in that era, it was a different time and they had different problems and different, there was good and bad. Like most of the time there was one working parent,
mm-hmm,
one car, that type of thing, and a simpler life in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of good to be said in my mind about that.
Mm-hmm.
It's less complicated, mm-hmm, in some ways. I guess life can become very complicated, mm-hmm, easily.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's nice to try and simplify things.
Mm-hmm.
My mother, actually, that's one thing that I did learn from her. Things were black and white.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, then as you age, you find out, well, this is sort of gray.
Right.
And sometimes I wish things could be a little more black and white. Mm-hmm. It makes life simpler.
It does.
But that isn't always the case. I'm sure you, especially in your profession,
mm-hmm,
you know, there's a lot of gray because of, you know, trying to do resolution conflict.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, go ahead.
I was just going to say, how do you manage to find amongst your, I'm going to call them clients because I don't really have a good grasp on exactly,
mm-hmm,
what you do, but as a conflict resolution type of thing, is that difficult because you have to sort of be careful of the words that you use,
mm-hmm,
in order to get them both parties to sort of want to progress,
mm-hmm,
and not turn someone off who maybe, and it might be just that day,
mm-hmm,
when, you know, they're having a bad day and it doesn't take too much to
right,
really turn them off so that they're not going to listen to you as much as with an open mind,
mm-hmm,
as they could.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's a good question. I haven't done very much professional work in conflict management, but I did have earlier this year, I actually mediated a conflict within my family, where a couple of people just like their communication was just like missing each other. They were just misunderstanding each other. And it was a very emotional situation. And I was like, if people are comfortable, like I can help with this. And so I think that the most helpful thing is for the kind of what Ben is doing, like the facilitator just doesn't actually talk very much. Like they'll pop in with a question or a clarification as needed, but mostly it's about getting the the parties and the conflict to talk. And one thing that I think is helpful that they taught us to do is come up with ground rules. Again, like Ben had for us at the beginning. And we're taught to get the parties to come up with the rules. So we might get them started and say, okay, what are some rules that we can agree on? And sometimes they have no idea where to start. So I might say, how about we agree we won't interrupt each other? And they're like, oh, okay. Yeah, we can do that. And then they'll typically go with it and they'll say, okay, let's agree. No name calling, no profanity. If it's people with like a long-term existing relationship, then they might say, we're going to stick to this situation. We're not going to bring up things that happened in the past. And so once everyone agrees on those rules, I think it's really handy to give everyone a pad of paper and a pen, because I don't want anyone to forget something important that they think of. But I also don't want people interrupting each other. So if the other person's talking and it reminds you of something you want to say, keep your mouth shut, but write it down. And so I think that what I find sometimes with conflicts, sometimes it's just that there's a piece of missing information on one or both sides. And so one person might be trying to make sense of what the other person's doing, but it's just not computing for them. And then once they get that piece of missing information, they're like, okay, yeah, that makes sense now. And then sometimes it's just a matter of interpretation. People are looking at the same exact event and are making different meaning out of it. Which is like literally the most fascinating thing in the world to me, like how that happens. But I think that sometimes, and I find this like when I have a conflict with my husband, if, you know, we just participated in the same conversation with each other, but we have very different feelings about it. And then if one person like explains, this is how I feel about what happened, these are the thoughts that I had, this is what I felt, and the other person says, that makes sense, I understand how you thought that and why you feel the way you do. Like, I don't know, that's like deflates like 90% of my anger and frustration, because someone has understood me and told me that my thoughts and feelings make sense. So I think once you can get people to actually stop and listen to each other and then hopefully get to the point of, now I'm understanding you, then after that, the anger is significantly decreased and then they can try to work on a solution. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. And it's sort of interesting because my latest gripe with the news lately is that when you listen, what used to be, I believe, used to be portrayed in the news were strictly facts. And I'm going to throw out a name like Walter Cronkite or somebody way back in that era. Maybe there weren't as many ads on TV and therefore they were not so much relaying events that happened so that people marketing the news so much as they were relaying facts.
Yes, that's and, the point.
Yeah, and what happens now is that when they're kind of trying to relay whatever an event that happened, they're using adjectives that are either negative or saying very, very, or they're using words that are not factual. That are more adjectives that are in describing something, but it's either a personal word or description or it's not an actual fact of what happened. If you say like the latest thing is about, just let's say, about the weather. Mm-hmm. Oh, there's this huge storm that is coming from the west, and it is devastating. And it's,
right.
You know, they're using extreme words mm-hmm. when they should say there's a storm forming that could be, you know, could be, I don't know, I'm trying to think of a factual word, which could possibly drop many inches of snow on these particular areas as it crosses the country. But now they're trying to sell time, and you get, you know, it's they're trying to draw you in to these big events so that you will watch their channel and use their advertisers. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's where a lot of problems come, is because everybody, media, no offense, Ben, you know, they are trying, everybody's vying for your interest, for your money, for your, you know, that type of thing, rather than these are the facts of something that happened. And like you're saying, when you have a conflict or you're trying to, you know, figure out what happened, each person has their own paradigm of what happened.
Yes.
But if you break it down to you said this, I said that, and then you go to like what you said, I felt when you said that, it made me feel this way. Then you're bringing in how the emotion came into the facts of what happened. So that's, I don't know, I'm blaming a lot on the media nowadays. And I think if you took some of the commercialization out of it, mm-hmm. out of so many things, out of everybody having to buy more and more things, just as a proof of how much more I care or something, that's, you know, I don't know. I get very discouraged because you've lost the essence of what you're trying to do.
Yeah. And I hear you, you know, alluding to the simplicity that you mentioned earlier when you were talking about your parents and the times and the settings that they were raising their family in, and how things were simpler when we're all getting our news from Walter Cronkite, and he was a very straight shooter. And there weren't a million different news outlets who are, like you said, all vying for your time and your money and your emotion, because they have to make money. And, you know, there's been such a change in the way we consume information in like the past 20 years, even. Like, people aren't buying newspapers. People want to get their news for free. It's rare for someone to like pay for a subscription where they can get their news without ads. And so everyone's trying to get the news out more quickly and more engagingly. And you're absolutely right that sometimes the way they do that is by putting a significant spin on what's happened to appeal to our biases, so that we're reading or watching or listening to something that already fits with our worldview. And then that makes it even harder for us to have those conversations with people who disagree with us. But it's also satisfying our need for simplicity, because I didn't have to critically think about the events in this news report. I just tuned into my favorite writer or reporter, and they tell me what to believe. And that's simple and it's easy, but it's not good.
Right. And I wonder if it doesn't influence like so many of the, I shouldn't, no, it's certainly not youngster, but people who then through whatever reason have gone off on their own beliefs and feel like they create these mass killings, or, you know, have guns and then decide for some reason that, like going into Nancy Pelosi's mm-hmm. house and you know, that's just one example. Sure. Any of the number, we didn't used to have these kinds of mass shootings going on.
Yeah, it's crazy. And
going into school, why would you want to hurt a little kid who you don't even know, who hasn't done anything to you?
Right.
They're acting out. Is there so much more illness now, mental illness in the world, that it causes people to have extreme beliefs one way or another? Mm-hmm. It's a little scary.
It is. Mm-hmm. And I agree that it is every day. Like, we don't even hear about all of the violence that occurs because it's the status quo now. People are not interested in clicking on those stories, and because they're so commonplace. But you're right. And I feel like it's a complicated problem and it needs more investigation into the nuance. Partly because the term mental illness is such a large umbrella, that, like, yes, I would say that someone who thinks that it's okay, or even warranted to take guns into an elementary school and shoot children is mentally ill. Like, we can agree that they are not well. But then there are also a lot of people who suffer from depression, anxiety disorders, and they have not ever been violent. And so I almost feel like the term mental illness, like, I hear what you're saying. And also as we're talking about it, I'm thinking we might need another term for this.
Yes.
Because mental illness is such a broad one. But yeah, it is really, you know, it's strange to think about how could someone be so far removed from reality and from quote unquote normal society that they think that this is important and necessary to do. Like, it doesn't make sense.
And it's so hard to what we consider normal. I mean, to them, it seems, I mean, I don't want to say perfectly normal, but to them it makes sense.
Right.
And then, but they turn it outward versus the person who has depression turns it inward, and is more apt to do themselves harm.
Right.
But I mean, I don't know, is it a fine line between those who turn it inward versus those who turn it outward? Mm-hmm. I mean, of course it then broadens the discussion to talk about gun laws, mm-hmm. but there are massive ways other than using guns that people can, you know, strike out against others. You're right. Mental illness is a very broad spectrum of events that it entails. So, but, you know, is it happening because the population is greater? I mean, if you lived in the wild, wild west and a cowboy went out and, I don't know, shot himself or jumped off a cliff, would you know about it because we didn't have the recordings of it, or we didn't, they were too far, the data was never, there was never a place to collect it or a means. Mm-hmm. Has it always been there? It's just, it makes you wonder.
It does, yeah, that's a good point. I didn't think about it that way. So I think what we're both doing that fits in with Ben's question is we're trying to make sense of these events, and like why do these events happen? Has stuff like this always happened? And it's just that we know about things more now. And how can we solve it? Like, is it a question of more mental health care? Is it a question of decreasing the availability of guns to people? So let's see.
Yeah, I think Ben wants us to say a little something about our political backgrounds and beliefs.
Mm-hmm. Which is just,
you know, I was never that much into politics and things. And actually, since I've retired, I've become more interested in it because there's a lot of instances where I've seen that a single person really can influence a lot, you know, much, much greater area of, I don't know, maybe it's because we are so media oriented now with, you know, Facebook and TikTok and how easy it is to spread our beliefs. But it's just, I've lost my train of thought. That was easy.
I'm with you. Yeah, you're right. It is, you're saying that you've become more interested in politics since you've retired, and you're wondering if that's partially because now it's so much easier to spread your, or talk about your beliefs and hear about others' beliefs. Like that information is all right out there on your phone. You can read as much as you want.
Yeah. I have to say, I myself, as far as politics are concerned, I am more apt to be interested in the person, mm-hmm. sometimes more than their political background, because there are sometimes I wish we had a third party, because, it would really mess things up in a lot of ways, but sometimes some of the people in one party do believe in things that the other party believes in, so that they're sort of a crossover.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to say that I'm mostly interested in their overall background. I want a person who is moral, ethical, and who does try to represent and bring people together. Mm-hmm. Not entirely. You don't ever want people to be totally all marching in the same direction. There always needs to be some, mm-hmm. Room for, questioning why we do something one way or another. But I usually vote the person, mm-hmm. more than the politics,
mm-hmm.
The political party, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel? How long, you've been voting now for how long?
15 years.
Okay. Do you vote every time you get a chance to vote?
I try to. Yes.
Okay.
And
okay.
That is partly because my husband is very interested in politics. He was a political science major in college. He went to law school. Then he got his MBA. Now he's getting his PhD in business. Like he loves politics, and he loves talking about these concepts. So he usually is the one who's like, "There's an election coming up. Here's, when do you want to go vote?" And, without that, I hope that I would be on it, but I don't know. That's one of the things in our marriage that he takes the lead on. But I really admire what you're saying about not reducing a person down to their political affiliation, and instead considering their background and their beliefs and values. And so you might, someone's political party affiliation might not be your favorite, but then you read about them and you're like, you know what? I think I trust this person. I think that if they were in a situation where they faced a difficult decision, they would follow their principles and they would try to do right by their constituents. And that is the most important thing. So I try to do that when I'm getting ready for an election. I try to get a sample ballot and look up all the candidates. And so I think most of the time I end up voting Democrat, but there are times that if I look at the candidates and I just feel better and trust the Republican one more, or, you know, I'll vote for them too. Like, I don't have a problem with that. I think that I also totally resonate with your, with you saying that there's so much crossover between the parties, and people are way more complicated than, okay, are you box A or box B? What? Like, that doesn't make any sense. But that's what our political system is based on. So I think it's really fascinating when other countries like the UK have a coalition government where they might have like five parties. And so in order to win an election, parties have to join and come up with compromises. And then hopefully they can consolidate enough power together to win an election. But I think that it's problematic that in the United States, we're like, okay, are you liberal or conservative? Are you a Democrat? Are you a Republican? Because that's, it's just not realistic. Because someone could, you know, be, I don't know, like, want more gun safety, but also, want to, you know, drill for oil more, and they also might, like, you know, be pro-life themselves, but they might not want to make that decision for other people. And so even like those, we try to boil people's opinions down into one or two words, and that doesn't tell the whole story about them. So weirdly, this is sounds insane. I think it would be really cool if my job was to travel around the country and just like ask someone, what are your thoughts and feelings about abortion, and how did you get there? And not in a judgment or trying to convince someone, because I think it's a complicated issue and people have many different reasons for feeling, believing what they do about it. And I just think that would be fascinating and would hopefully provide more nuance than the binary that we have, which I don't think it's productive.
No, I have to agree. This, it is, like you say, it's too binary. It's, and if you only have two political parties, but there are so many complicated issues that, you know, like, let's say the five or six biggest issues that are, you know, they make them be polar. Mm-hmm. And it can't be polar. Like on this side, if you are a Democrat, you believe A, B, C, D, E.
Right.
And the opposite on the other one, because there's too many issues. It's not black and white. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot to be said, like you said, about, you know, the UK and having people sort of have to conglomerate what it is that they believe in and all get together. And there's, I don't know, I would think that would work a lot better. It was odd because when I moved down here not that long ago, a piece of my mail got delivered up the street, and the fellow evidently had a hold of it for a while and then came and delivered it to me. And one of the, and he, oh, you know, where are you from? That type of thing. And so I told him, oh, so you're a liberal, huh? I bet you believe in abortion or something.
My gosh, that's so much.
right off, it's like, hello, it's nice to meet you. Started immediately.
That's a lot.
Talking about abortion. And I'm like, that's one of the first things. I mean, you just don't talk to people that you're meeting so quickly.
Yeah.
But he did.
Special.
And it was like, No, that's not the way I believe. But it was amazing, like, you know, like you're saying, that this polarity, if you're from this area, you believe this. Right. And no, that isn't right. True.
No, not at all. Like, there are some areas of the country that might be more heavily red than blue or blue than red, but to say that, like, everyone in New England is liberal, that's dumb.
I mean, you've got Bernie Sanders and, you know, whatever, but there, it's just,
yeah, but there's also many people who are more conservative, people who are more moderate, such an enormous group of people to say, okay, well, you used to live in New England, therefore you must be pro-choice.
Yeah, postage stamp.
Yeah, and so that, first of all, if I'm in that situation myself, I would have felt very uncomfortable. But also, I, just being me, I probably would have, you know, gone into, like, interviewer mode and been like, huh, what makes you say that?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Just, like, made him lay all of his stuff out.
Yeah, put it back on him.
Yeah, until he, like, settles down. And I also will be kind of curious, like, okay, well, it sounds like these are issues that you have really strong feelings about.
And how did you come to them?
Yeah, and then he's not yelling at you for what he assumes about you. But you get a chance to learn more about him. And then that's also kind of a self-defense thing I do sometimes. If someone's coming on, like, really strong to me, I will, okay, well, tell me about yourself. And then
turn it back.
And then they're not yelling at me anymore. So that's good.
Yeah. Turn it back on them.
Right. So yeah. What did you do?
I think I sort of tap danced a little bit because I think I was taken aback.
Yeah.
And I guess what I should have done is more like what you said, like, oh, and why do you think that? Or you know, what's your, how did you come to your
place? Oh my gosh.
Sorry. You need to cool it. You need to cool it. Sit. Quiet.
Not a problem. I have a cat, but he doesn't make that much noise.
Sorry, the repair person just came in.
Raven, hush.
Sorry. So you were saying that you were tapped.
I didn't.
Because you felt defensive.
Yeah. And I could have. I think your approach was a much better one. You know, but I did try to sort of tap dance around it. Like, I don't want to get into this kind of a conversation.
Right.
The very first meeting you.
Right.
And I still don't know that person.
Well, and it sounds like from the way he came in that you're like, I don't know if this is the person I want to know. If this is the type of energy he brings to the first interaction with someone, I'm like, I don't know if I want to spend a lot of time with this person.
Right.
Okay.
I don't mind getting into a conversation with someone after a while of knowing them.
Right.
But it's you peel back the layers when you first start to talk to someone. You usually stay on safe things, the weather, did you see what happened the other day, you know, all of those safe subjects.
Right.
And after a lot of times of meeting and, hi, how are you, you know, what's going on, that type of thing, after a while, and it usually has to be quite a few, like, layers of the onion, do you get into that kind of a conversation?
Yeah, I really do have to build up some psychological safety before you can have a conversation that potentially divisive, and you have to
trust each other to be respectful.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, Ben wrote, "We're coming to the end of this conversation. We wanted to ask each of us about our thoughts on the past hour." Well, I've really enjoyed getting the chance to know you some, Jenny, and hear about your thoughts and experiences. I feel like you were just saying about a neighbor, okay, like you don't want to jump right into a real intense conversation first, but I also, like, because we're in this setting and we both signed up to be respectful and just learn from each other, I feel like I learned some things about you that normally I wouldn't have right away, like,
yes,
about figures who are influential to you, and the way that you vote in elections, like what that thought process is like. So I really appreciated you sharing that with me.
I thought it was great. And I do, I agree that in this type of a situation where we're encouraged to maybe start to broach, you know, sensitive subjects or subjects that might be, you know, controversial, you know, we're given a lot more freedom than the person who is bringing my mail, totally
right,
introducing himself for the first time.
That's
so
wild.
You know, I've enjoyed it. It was great.
Yeah. So. Thank you. And thank you, Ben, for facilitating.
This was an easy one. You guys did great. It was wonderful to hear you interact. Some people really need some prodding or some curbing. And you did not need either. So that's great.
You did it.
You did it. Congratulations.
Yay.
And congratulations for being willing to do this. It's you're putting yourself out there, and that's admirable. All right. I'm going to turn off the recording now. We are done with that.